say.
Martin will come to order. We do have four.
Lots to do today, so we're going to start here. We had a request to change the bills up on the agenda. First, we've got House File 251, Representative Eklund, and please come up with testifiers. Hang on a minute, Representative Eklund. Got to do the minutes. Somebody read the minutes. Representative Listelgaard. Move the minutes. Everybody's read those. All in favor of the minutes from the last meeting, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted. Okay. Now we can move ahead here. And I'm going to move House File 251 to be referred to Ways and Means. And Environment Finance. And you have an author's amendment, Representative Eklund?
I do, Mr. Chair.
And I'll move the DE2 amendment, put the bill in the shape that the author wants. Everybody have the amendment? Any questions, comments? Not seeing none. All in favor of the DE2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? DE2 amendment is adopted. Okay. Please proceed, Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this bill we had was up last year, and what it does is it designates the southern part of the underground, the Lake Vermilion Sedan Underground Mine State Park, as an ATV accessible part of the park. It was originally designated to do that, and we have this bill in to see that we make that happen. It's a unique piece of property for the state park system. It is separated by Highway 169, so this ATV access part of the park will have no connection to the lakeside part of the state park. And when this is done, when this state park is done, we'll have access to the Prospector ATV trail, and we'll provide further access to the other existing ATV trails in northeastern Minnesota. With that, I have a testifier, Gary Sigbenick, came to explain the details of the bill. We did have another, Mr. Ron Potter was supposed to be here today, but I don't know if the weather kept him out of here or what happened. So anyway, I'll turn it over to the testifier, Mr. Chair.
Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Gary Sirkvenek. I represent the Prospector ATV Trail, and sorry that I'm your second choice, but I'll try to do well by you. The campground that's envisioned as part of the master plan for Vermilion State Park was always assumed and planned to include an ATV accessible campground, and that's why it was on the south side of Highway 169, separating it from the lakeside portion of the park. We're not removing the land in the south boundary from the state park system, however, because of the purchase agreement with U.S. Steel. When the park land was purchased, if any part of the park was removed, the land would revert back to U.S. Steel at their option. And so what we're doing is, and vice of counsel, is to classify it in a similar fashion that the legislature did at Teteguch several years ago to provide for a similar situation. So I think it's a reasonable approach, Mr. Chairman, and we'd appreciate the committee's support.
Thank you for that testimony. Are there other testifiers? Others that want to testify?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could we hear from DNR?
DNR is here, you bet. Come on down here. Introduce yourself and proceed, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Phil Leversedge. I'm the Deputy Director for the Division of Parks and Trails with the DNR. And as Representative Eklund mentioned in his opening statement, this bill was heard last year. And we are in support of the current language that would designate the portion of the park that is south of Highway 169 as a secondary unit under the Outdoor Recreation Act. It would be a state recreation area under the ORA. It would be consistent with the plan, the master plan that was developed when Lake Vermilion Sudan Underground Mine State Park was established and master plan completed in 2010.
Thank you. I have a question here, Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is probably for the DNR. It seems to me that last year, maybe the year before, the previous commissioner of the DNR had made comments, and I believe it was on this mine, that it was losing so much money they would be better off giving everybody that wanted to go there $20 and closing it. And I'm wondering if by opening this up to ATVs, would is within your plan, would this bring more money into the area and help support this park?
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, we expect that the ATV-friendly campground located in that portion of the recreation area will be popular as it will connect with the Prospector's Loop, which will become a destination ATV trail system.
Thank you. Representative Loop.
Thank you, Mr. Sharon. This is really a question for the DNR, I think. What are you doing at this point as an agency to consider that we've got a lot of senior citizens and handicapped, et cetera, that do use ATVs, particularly with the side-by-side variants? We find ourselves in situations where these folks are expected to park their ATVs in the right-of-way of a state highway, and they can see the bathroom. They can see the picnic table, and they're required to walk in because of the current general policy of just absolutely excluding ATVs from literally touching a square foot of state park ground.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we recognize that ATVing is a growing sport. We are trying to accommodate ATV use primarily through development of facilities in our state forest, which are the facilities that are most consistent under the Outdoor Recreation Act. Also, most of the ATV trail systems are located in the state forest lands, so we feel that the most appropriate way to develop ATV accessible facilities is on our state forest lands. We are in the process right now of opening up another 10 state forest campgrounds to ATV ingress and egress, and I think that will go a long ways towards providing that kind of amenity for ATV recreationalists.
Thank you. I'm not particularly impressed that that's the kind of step that's a tiptoe. You are aware that on state highways, county highways, ATVs are acceptable to use the back slope. So we do have to recognize that there's a whole nother element where they're forced to travel there in a lot of cases. And so I just would ask you to broaden your look here, use the whole map, look at state and county highways, township roads that interface with state rec areas and state parks, because that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the elderly people driving by can't even use the facilities without stopping, parking, and walking in. We allow the use of the state highway right-of-ways, and so I think we need to take a really fresh look at that. And I want to compliment Representative Eklund here on at least taking a swipe on one piece of this, but we've got so far to go in this area. It's we just got to catch up with what people are doing. I know that's hard for a state agency, but let's just get on with it.
Other comments here or questions? Representative Beckwith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't know if the DNR would know this or some of the other folks, some of the other comments that have been made, but do we know how many, you know, people who qualify for a disability parking permit, do we know how many of those folks are actually using ATVs and would potentially be impacted by the scenario that that's been talked about?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beckerfin, I don't have that information available. I can check to see if we can find that. Not sure if we gather that information related to ATV registrations. I don't believe we do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would, you know, if there are legitimate concerns about accessibility for folks, my brother has a disability and uses a wheelchair, and I think there are probably other ways we can solve that problem without wholesale going against, you know, some of our longstanding traditions in the state. So would be happy to work with Representative Eklund or others if that's a legitimate concern as far as ADA accessibility. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, to those comments, I would simply say this. It doesn't make any difference if it's 10 people or if it's 10,000 people. We have a responsibility to provide access to our state facilities, and I think that it's an important conversation to have.
You agree on that conversation? I'd like to add here, Reverend Luke brought up back slopes. Our township spends lots of dollars fixing back slopes every spring. I mean, and that's so there's, you know, there's several sides to this. And some people don't like the noise, you know. I happen to be one of them. So, but we'll figure this out. I'm glad to hear that there's campgrounds that are opening up for ATVs. I think that's a good start. Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Beckerfin made the comment suggesting we could work on this from the perspective of maybe looking at potentially trying to figure out how to connect folks who may have a disability, some access that the other ones wouldn't have, and I don't think that's a bad idea. But you're forgetting that with the advent of these new vehicles that are now very popular, the side-by-side element, there are lots of these that will carry as many as six passengers legally. Lots of families like mine that are in the exact same situation. And if we have to be crossing highways with little kids that we otherwise wouldn't have to access facilities that now we are excluded from, you know, because we can't bring our ATV in there, we can bring our car directly up right next to those facilities, but we can't bring that side by side. So I don't think it's a solution to simply say we're going to look at one category, because there's lots of families that are impacted by this as well.
Okay, I have an A1 amendment. Are you presenting that, Representative Fabian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A1 amendment, please. What we're doing well. Representative Lewick said it's a good opportunity to broaden your look, and this is an opportunity to continue to broaden our look. The Friends of Hayes Lake State Park and the Roseau County Commissioners started this conversation last year. What we would like to do is have a pilot project that simply allows people to access the park in the same areas that you would if you were driving your pickup in there, the picnic area, the camp area, and be able to just use the Hayes Lake State Park. You'd have to buy a sticker to get in there. We heard yesterday testimony from a number of different people with regards to the trail systems that we're developing across northern Minnesota, and I really appreciate that. We have a very significant trail system in the Beltrami Island State Forest. Hayes Lake State Park sits on the furthest northwest corner of the Beltrami Island State Forest. We have an increased demand for opportunities for ATVs. What we'd like to do here is just allow people to drive into the park, use the facilities there, whether it's the picnic area or the camp area. They can park in the parking areas. They can walk down to the beach. The taxpayers of the state of Minnesota don't have to spend any more money to develop another campground someplace. It's all right there. We've had a public meeting in War Road with regards to this issue. There were probably 40 people there, and there was basically a near unanimous support for this pilot project that we started last year,
And this is just a continuation of that conversation, and I'm hoping that you will accept my amendment.
Any questions, comments from anybody? Any testifiers? Representative Fabian, on your amendment?
No, I do not.
Representative Hans.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I think the thing with the state parks is they belong to everyone. And this is the critical issue we're going to hear about in many facets all session. Should we allow motorized vehicles, ATVs, into state parks or wildlife management areas or other state properties? So the system as it's set up right now, we're hearing from the DNR that they're using a plan to make things accessible where it's appropriate and involving the public in that process. If we start accepting these amendments here and other places, then we will open up, frankly, Pandora's box, where we're going to have this debate based on power rather than best use for these public properties that belong to everybody. Representative Fabian, I understand what you're saying about trying to make things available for the disabled. I think that's a goal that everyone has. But opening it up for the mixed use for the state parks, it'll be this park, and that'll be another park, and that'll be another park, and there'll be another wildlife management area. And how things work is this is the precedent. We did it here, and then when there's power, we'll do it again. And so I would oppose the A1 amendment.
Representative Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I did hear a comment from my fellow legislator that this belongs to all the folks. Remember, what we're asking here is simply the ability to access the areas where you can drive a big camper in, you can drive pickup trucks, you can drive motorcycles in there. We're not in any way asking to leave those parking lots or those type of things, just asking for simple access to things like bathrooms and picnics and tables and stuff like that. And ATVs are a lot quieter than they were a decade or more ago. They meet the noise standards. If we're going to walk the walk on all people here, then I think this is really not asking too much to at least start a pilot program on something like this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, the comments about power, right now the power is at the state agency, and the people in Roseau County and the area around there feel powerless in this situation because powerful forces are opposing a simple request to open up a park to a pilot project to see if it works. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't continue. That's simply all we're asking for, the little people of Roseau County and the surrounding area. And I'm down here as their voice, and I'm hoping that the rest of you will support their request of the state of Minnesota, where the power rests.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to also speak in favor of the amendment. And with all due respect, Representative Hansen, there's so many of these parks that we're seeing declining numbers in terms of folks that are accessing them. I'm not saying that this is the end-all solution to making sure parks continue to get the kind of trends upward that we would like. But in some places, this might make really good sense. And I think a pilot would let us have that opportunity to see if that's an opportunity that people are going to take advantage of or not. And there's no question that there's, because I've been out and amongst these folks that are families like mine, and there's no way that we can access the kind of area that's available. Well, maybe on horseback, there might be a way I could bring six horses out into the wilderness, but I can bring one ATV and I can load it up and my whole family can go out and we can see stuff that we otherwise would never see. And in these parts of the state where you mentioned, they are public. It belongs to everybody. But this is really a neat opportunity that families like. And I hope that we would consider moving that amendment and just seeing what that might look like.
I want to ask if anybody out there in the audience, the public, has something to say here, please come on up here. Introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I'm Ann Lincheski, and I'm here representing the Parks and Trails Council of Minnesota. And I want to thank all of you for thinking about this issue this morning. I'm having the pages are passing out the testimony for the Parks and Trails Council for this exact bill last year. Unfortunately, the executive director, Brett Feldman, would love to be with you, but he cannot be here today, so I'm pinch hitting for him. Our position on this proposal has not changed. Parks and Trails Council continues to oppose the use, even as a pilot project, even in just one park, of ATVs in state parks. As Chair Hansen stated, we have grave concerns about the precedent. You know, we want to put on the record once again, having worked with Chair Fabian on this, we understand that Minnesotans recreate in many ways and like ATVs, and we don't oppose ATVs or the people who ride them. The DNR has a process whereby it designates different kinds of public lands for different things. The Minnesota Outdoor Recreation Act has not allowed ATVs in state parks ever. It would be groundbreaking if this committee or any other allowed this amendment to pass. ATVs are allowed in state forests. They are allowed in recreation areas. And, in fact, members should know that the use of ATVs on trails in Minnesota already has 18 times the habitat that the state parks do. State parks are 75 little dots on the whole state of Minnesota, and we're simply asking that ATV trails are not allowed in the state parks for obvious reasons. To the issue of declining use in state parks, while there may be some parks that experience some declines, overall the state parks are burgeoning. The DNR will tell you, they are the busiest thing in the DNR system. 10 million people visit the state parks per year. If you add everything else up that's going on in hunting and fishing and ATVing, they don't come close to what's happening in the state parks. These are overwhelmingly our parks for the whole entire state, and we would really urge you to not change what's been the law in Minnesota for so long. We understand that Chair Fabian has worked hard on behalf of the ATV community to find more options and more camping facilities in particular. We want you to know that the state trails and state parks are ADA accessible now. And as Representative Becker Finn was stating, you know, if you imagine yourself on a state trail, we have people walking with canes, with walkers, in wheelchairs, running, biking. So, you know, just put yourself in that situation and envision that. So we do continue to oppose this piece of legislation. I know Chair Fabian worked hard on it last year. For members who are new to the committee or new to the legislature, this did not become law last year, and obviously because that's why we're here again. If you can envision, you know, who were the players here last year, it didn't pass then. We certainly hope with new players and new people in certain places, you know, in different majorities and minorities and offices, it wouldn't happen again. We also want to thank Chair Eklund, and just on the bill overall, Mr. Chair, if I can just state, we really appreciate what that Chair Eklund and others have followed the DNR process, as Chair Hansen walked through, which is that, as the DNR has said, you know, some areas are for scientific and natural areas where nobody can go. There can't be a state park there. Others, we allow ATVs in state forests, in state rec areas. You know, we really appreciate that the advocates for Vermilion, and when the park was planned, have worked hard to go through the DNR process, and we want to thank both Chair Eklund and the DNR that we did participate in that process. We were at the table for those management meetings on deciding how this new Park Vermilion should be designed. We continue to disagree with the decision, but there was a process, a public process, over a very long period of time to figure out how to plan for this park and to designate this unit differently. And so we see a very big difference between these different ideas that are happening in the committee this morning, Mr. Chair, and very much appreciate the opportunity to testify. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Some more comments, questions here. Representative Babin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, former Chair Lincheski, I appreciate your testimony, but you're kind of taking it to a place that this bill doesn't go. You're talking about people with canes on trails and so forth, and you know full well that that's not what this bill does. You cannot drive under this bill an ATV in Hayes Lake State Park, any place that you or anybody else cannot drive their pickup or their car or anything else, okay? This is simply on the roads that are designated for motor vehicles. And it's not on the trails. Hayes Lake State Park, Mr. Commissioner or Deputy Director, Director Leversedge can tell you, several thousand acres. And the footprint that you would be able to access under this is extremely small in regards to the total acres of the park. The bill that I have in the legislature this year is a bill that I worked with, talked to Representative Eklund about. It was the bill that did both. The Sudan Underground Mine Park and what we're doing there today, and this. And we've had conversations about moving these bills together and separately. And it's, you know, I talked to Representative Eklund yesterday, and at that point I'll let him speak for himself, but I think that we had an agreement on how we were going to proceed here. This goes back a year. You're absolutely right. And in good faith, okay, I didn't put it into our bill last year. In good faith. And what has the DNR done since then for the people in Roseau County and Hayes Lake, the Friends of Hayes Lake State Park? They've had one public hearing at which they couldn't answer questions about changing the designation to a state rec area. I've asked DNR several times to pick up the phone and call the people in Roseau County and talk to them, the commissioners and the Friends of the Park, and to the best of my knowledge, nothing has happened. Okay? So we are here today out of a sense of some frustration because I've been told that we're going to do this and nothing happens. So back to the comments about the power, Mr. Chair. We know where the power rests, and the power is not doing what they told me they were going to do. So I'm asking folks here to help me move this along so that we can continue a conversation and maybe something actually can get done. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Eklund. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian brought this to me yesterday. I've been to Hayes Lake State Park. I understand what he's trying to do, and I told him I did not have a problem with him introducing this amendment.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, I have a few comments I'd like to provide on this amendment. DNR opposes this amendment for a number of reasons. Firstly, because it is inconsistent with the Outdoor Recreation Act. It's also inconsistent with 6100 recreation rules that prohibit motorized ATVs in state parks. We are in the middle of a public process that began with the public hearing up in War Road. We also had a public meeting in St. Paul. We've had over 1,400 comments submitted through a written survey from park visitors, park users. We are assembling the comments and putting together some recommendations. The preliminary information that we have is that people are looking for better amenities, but they are not, based on the comments we received, specifically saying that they want those to be in Hayes Lake State Park. We are looking at proposals that would develop camping amenities on the Beltrami State Forest. As a matter of fact, we have preliminary designs for a campground at Clear River, which is on the Beltrami State Forest. So we are trying to provide for the recreation that people are looking for at in the Hayes Lake area, but we feel it's more consistent to provide that recreation on the state forest.
More comments, questions? Representative Becker-Pinn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first, I want to acknowledge and thank Representative Eklund. You know, it's clear that what you're doing in your bill is not changing the rules about our state parks. And I think this is the way to address the issue, is to say, instead of changing the rules about state parks, recognize that, you know, a part of the current state park maybe functions differently and is more appropriate to be designated as a state recreation area. So I think that approach makes a lot of sense to me. And then I just wanted to remind people of the Outdoor Recreation, our Outdoor Recreation Act. I believe it was enacted in 1975. And I think that really should be our guiding principle in looking at this issue. And one of the things that it says in the Outdoor Recreation Act regarding our state parks is that park use shall be primarily for aesthetic, cultural, and educational purposes and shall not be designed to accommodate all forms or unlimited volumes of recreational use. And I think that's really important as we look at the different types of designation of the lands that the DNR has oversight for, that there really are distinct purposes for each of those things. And I think that goes back to the comments about the current users of our state parks and how this isn't something that they're asking for. And so, you know, this law has been in place for 44 years, and I think that that precedent should hold. So, again, encourage folks to take a look at the entire Outdoor Recreation Act. It's really helpful when you think about what's an appropriate way to address this issue. So thank you.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to apologize, first of all, because I didn't realize that this conversation was going to go this deep, and if I had, I would have brought a lot more information with me. So I'm going to go by memory on some of the stuff that I have in my office. And one of them is, don't quote me on the numbers, but they're close. We have about 73 state parks and recreation areas. 51 of those are losing money right now. And so I think as the last information that I had, we were losing about $3.5 million on our parks and recreation areas. Thank the Lord for Itasca State Park, because it makes a ton of money, and we're supplying, you know, picking up the rest. So whatever we can do to bring more people into these parks, if we're going to have them, is going to be a responsibility of ours. And we've heard the DNR talk about the rules on recreation. And for you guys that are new here, if you're not familiar with rules are not put in place by the legislature. They are laws that are adopted by agencies outside of the formula where we're supposed to be making laws for the people of Minnesota. The rules were supposed to be in place to allow the agencies to put into place the laws that we pass, and they've gone far beyond that. But if there is a rule there right now, then it's incumbent upon us as legislators, people elected by the people of the state, to examine those rules to see if they are still applicable to the state. And we just heard that some of these laws and rules go back 40 years. Well, we're not 40 years. We don't live 40 years in the past. We live today. And there's a lot of things that are different now today. And, you know, we're constantly putting money, we're getting requests from the DNR for money, because if they don't, we're going to have to close parks. We're going to have to lose amenities here and there. This is an opportunity for us to say, you know, maybe this is a way to bring some money in so we don't have to continually look at what might happen if we have to close these parks. So, you know, there's a lot of things that we could talk about. If we get into rules if my bills come forward, we'll talk a little more about the rules. But this is not going to destroy anything, and it may be an opportunity for us to say a little more income, a little more people visiting these parks that are on the verge of shutting down. So I hope that we'll take this amendment.
Representative Green, I just want to comment. We agree that we think the creator did good on Itasca Park. So, Representative Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess one of the comments I'd heard from an earlier testifier was we don't want ATV trails built in state parks. Let's get this off the table. That's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is simply allowing people access to pretty basic stuff. I didn't realize that in 1975 we were going to ban recreational activity of using a restroom, but that's literally what we're talking about here for folks that are driving right by one on a public right-of-way. Again, both of these bills are talking about the ability here to use the amenities. In most cases, they absolutely exist. We're talking about parking lots, folks. We're talking about bathrooms, picnic tables, that type of stuff. And the idea that a piece of legislation that was written in 1975 is what? Untouchable and unamendable. I think we got to be a lot more forward thinking than that. A lot of the things that we take for granted today didn't exist in 1975. So I think we got to take this amendment and then pass the whole bill.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I find it interesting that we're concerned about setting a precedent with Representative Fabian's amendment at the Hayes Lake State Park, and yet when you clear away the dust or whatever, Lake Vermilion is also a state park. And even though it was part of a plan years ago to designate this area and it's separated by a highway, it's still a state park. And hearing discussion about the state adapting to newer, more modern trends and uses in our parks, I think the amendment would be a good trial run to see if, in fact, it increases income or visitors to the park, and yet if it's compatible with the original intent of the park. So to me, it's a good way to kind of dip in the waters and see if this is something we should look at more. And I think the amendment is a good start, and I would support the amendment as well, Mr. Chair.
Let's see, do we have any more testifiers? I'm going to go around one more time. Oh, Representative Bull.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My family and I have had the good fortune of enjoying many different state parks over the years, and most of those occasions have been quiet and relaxing and tranquil. But I've had a few neighbors in camping spots next to ours that had a loud car, a loud truck, a loud motorcycle. And so, you know, they were accessing through the roads like everyone else, but they did detract from the enjoyment a bit, but it was still getting away from home and enjoying the time. I think it's important that we note and stress the fact that this is talking about ATV access and not ATV trails. There's a big difference in my mind between those two. Access, to me, just means that they can come in and enjoy the same facilities and the same amenities that everyone else does. Last thought is, in local government, I've seen a lot of different pilot projects occur. And pilot projects really are a way to try something and see if it works. Sometimes they prove to be workable. Sometimes they don't. But in my mind, it's a way of trying on a pair of shoes before you buy them. And that pilot project, I think, is the right approach in this case to see if this works or if it doesn't. So I would encourage and recommend support of the amendment as well. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? If not, I just want to add to the conversation just a little bit, if I may. I had the opportunity 30 years ago or so to address this issue of recreation, not recreation, recreation. You look it up in the dictionary. I don't know if anybody else has, but I had the opportunity to do that as part of my work with tribal government. What's it mean to recreate? If you look at it, you go back a long ways and doesn't have any motors in it or nothing, to your point, for example. So I believe that we're evolving in what we're going to see in our society. I also believe, Representative Fabian, that the DNR is making an effort to look at your issue. And I'm going to support you and them in looking at the issue. That's the way I'd like to proceed with that. That's my personal preference, is that the DNR be given time, not a whole lot of time. I think, I've got stuff that you guys are looking at, too, over at the DNR, and I know it's never enough time to do everything, but that's the way I would like to proceed. I do think we're going to look at things different in the future. And I think when we get to where those ATVs are electric, they're probably going to be everywhere. That's my personal opinion. So, and they're a lot quieter than they used to be. I think we'll take a vote there on this is the A1 amendment. All in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 All opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Division. Division.
Okay, we'll call the roll.
Purcell?
No.
Beckerfin?
No.
Lewick?
Yes.
Acom?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Bow?
Yes.
Claflin?
No.
Fabian?
Yes.
Gomez?
No.
Green?
Yes.
Hansen?
No.
Heinzman?
Yes.
Lippert?
No.
Lislegaard?
Yes.
Wagenius?
No.
The nays have it under the county or three. Oh, I'm sorry. 8-7, the nays have it. The amendment is not adopted. Now we'll proceed to the to your bill. Representative Eklund, we've had all the testimony on it. Do you have some last comments?
No last comments, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the time at the committee, and I ask that they vote in favor of the bill.
So, all in favor, House File 251, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
251 is moved and
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Proceeding to.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, as amended, sorry. As amended, refer to Ways and Means. Next we have Representative Fisher, House File 875. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'd like to move House File 875, and please proceed in explaining your bill, Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for the opportunity to present 875. Just as a little background, this is a bill that started last year as 3908. It was something that was incorporated in the larger omnibus bill that did not make it through, so we're bringing it back this year. I want to say thank you to all the people that have been helping out. We've had a large number of people providing input. I appreciate the encouragement I've had from when Chair Fabian was in charge last year of keeping the bill going. I appreciate the input of Representative Torkelson, who's been helping put this bill together. I want folks to know that this has been something that has been a lot of people working together on. It's been a very bipartisan bill, and it does some really great work. Part of the process where this started is currently when we've had in law for planning to deal with water, you've got to use a different planning process for everything. So if you're going to deal with surface water, you use one planning process. And it looks different if you've got a planning process for water that's already impaired versus a water that is not impaired. If you're dealing with groundwater, you take a look at another area. If you're dealing with source water protection, surface source water protection, they are all siloed apart. And one of the things that we looked at that was brought to me was let's try to bring them all together in one overall planning process, because what was happening in the past is people could spend their entire time planning and not always carrying efforts out forward. And so that was the basis of the bill. What it does is it takes a number of different provisions together, puts them together in a way that allows planning to happen all at the same time, and make sure that we still have the accountability so that we've got results, measurable results being done at the end of the process. From the time that we had the bill introduced last year, there have been some minor tweaks that did occur, and basically there were tweaks that helped clarify the language and bring sections together. Anytime we're dealing with something that's very complicated, that's been siloed, when you start bringing things together, it may make sense to those who've got a lot of technical expertise, but when you try to get into a little bit more understandable language, it doesn't always follow that way. And so there was a lot of work dealing with House research to help make sure that would occur, and then also following up with the people over the last since the last session to make sure that everything was still working the way it was as we were clarifying the language. So I want to thank everybody who's been involved in the process. What I'd like to do then is kind of walk through the bill a little bit here, give a little bit of history of where we've been. This is dealing with the Clean Water Legacy Act, which was first passed in 2006. It was to provide authority and direction and resources to achieve maintained water quality standards for groundwater and surface waters. Passage of the Clean Water Land and Legacy Constitution Amendment occurred in 2008. That created the Clean Water Fund that helped provide resources to systemically assess and then take action to protect, enhance, and restore water quality in lakes, rivers, streams, and to protect our groundwater from degradation and to protect our drinking water supplies. Amendments were made to Chapter 114D in 2013 involving watershed restoration and protection strategy, which has been shortened to the name RAPS. You may hear different abbreviations as we go through here because a lot of these words get very long and cumbersome, and so people have gotten used to reducing. So you may hear RAPS, and that's what RAPS is. Another one is that was trying to address is total maximum daily load of pollutants that go into a water body. That is called TMDL. So you may hear some of those abbreviations as we're going through the presentation today. And then finally, some things I want to mention is that in 2015, to help start making better planning processes and carry out things more effectively, we started going to the One Watershed, One Plan legislation that was approved in 2015. And what this does is it focuses on science-based comprehensive plans, on-the-ground local implementation of work being done by our counties, our soil and water conservation districts, our watershed districts, and our local governments. And this bill that I've got before us brings more of that work together into hopefully a seamless process as we move forward. Some things I'd like to kind of highlight a little bit, the bill is 11 pages long, so it is quite technical. I'll try to summarize a little bit of some of the different sections of what is happening there, and then as I finish that, I'll turn it over to our testifiers here to explain how they see it working and then be able to open for questions at that point. First of all, I want to hit Section 1, Subdivision 5, Section 2. What this does is it removes unnecessary old language from the late 1980s about country water planning and startup, and it provides options for pass-through funds coming from the state to local governments to be more efficient and support a watershed approach to fund large and multi-participant water quality improvement programs. Section 3, Subdivision 2.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
We've got a problem. Some of us don't have the bill, and some people only have just a couple of pages of the bill.
All right. Yeah. We'll see if we can remedy that here, Representative Fabian.
Okay. No, that's all right. You want me to pause here a second while the...
Take a second here. Yeah. Make sure everybody's on the same page, so to speak.
Right.
I understand, too, Representative, there was some copier issues this morning. I think mine is. I think 11 pages.
Yeah, but do you have
every other one?
You just have the odd number.
Yeah.
Well, we'll just go with the odd number.
Reducing size of government.
I've got to be my copy.
Recess.
Mr. Chair, While we're waiting for the bill, maybe we could start with some of the have some of the testimony start, and then I can come back once everyone's got a copy to go over the different sections. Would that be something the committee would be open to?
I guess I'd like to have everybody have the language in front of them, Representative Fisher. Okay. I think that's going to be a better way to go. We're just going to recess here for a few minutes and.
Okay.
Well, we could. Yes. Yeah, we could do that. We've got so much time. We
tried. No, that's okay. You've got to have the bill.
Well, okay.
That's right.
No, it's the right bill. It's double sided.
We're just missing the every other page.
I don't know how you make
sense. I think it's going to be a brief recess, Representative Cable. So this is a fair one this year.
Yeah. Like if I wanted to do that, I don't know how I would.
Yeah. I don't know.
I ended up on my computer, so I didn't.
Representative Fisher, I'm going to lay 875 on the table, and we're going to proceed with President Cable. So, I 262. House Lot 262. All moved and set till be in front of us. I don't see any amendments, so please proceed and tell us about the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is amending the rules for stamp design for some of the DNR contests. And so art comes in many mediums, and we just want to make sure that everybody has their chance to submit. And so with that, I'll turn it over to my testifier, Dr. Pierce.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mark Pierce, dentist and wildlife painter. And I've entered a number of the DNR contests. They have five habitat stamp contests. A few years ago, I started doing digital painting. And digital painting, if you don't know, is with the iPad Pro. You take what's basically an electronic pencil, and you paint just the same way as I'd paint with a brush. It's absolutely the same. I can change the colors. I can do different brush styles. But this is made not with photographs. It's made just with totally drawing and painting. And this is newer technology. It came out in 2015. So I looked at the rules in the 2018 and 2019 contest, which was held in 2017, and I did this trout stamp. And the rules at the printed rules that the DNR gave out says designs may be in one or a combination of media, no preclusion to digital at all. So I thought, great. So I started to do my entries. I did three or four entries, got to the first one, which was the trout stamp contest, and turned it in, and I got a call the next day from the DNR, and they said, oh, we're sorry. The rules that are printed and given out to the artists are different than the statutes, and we have to go by the statute. And the statute says no digital art because it was designed, I think it was before this technology even existed, and a lot of the digital art at the time was manipulating photographs, which is not what this is anymore. So They did change that and got the rules that are printed to the artists the same, but it took a little bit of work to get that changed back. And in the meantime now, even the Minnesota State Fair has a fine arts competition. Their new rules say, as digital technology continues to expand and influence the way many artists work, not simply photographers, acceptance of these entries has expanded into all classes. So the fair has realized, you know, this is a huge new technology. Artists are using this. And the Louisiana Duck Stamp Competition also has no restriction on media at all. Now, some do, because I think they're still thinking that digital technology is simply the manipulation of photographs, and it's not. It can be used for photographs, but this is art. And I think the way to think of this is similar if the state of Minnesota had a composition, music competition, you would say, well, as long as you compose your song on a piano or a trumpet or guitar, that's fine. But if you use a synthesizer or an electronic piano, no, that wouldn't be allowed. It's just the medium that you're using, and I think that's what we're just trying to do. If you look at the numbers of people that compete in these stamp contests, the average number of entries is only about 9 in all of these contests. So expanding it to a digital component might allow some people, like me, to enter. Thanks.
Thanks for your testimony. Questions, comments? Anybody in the audience that would like to offer testimony on this House File 262? Representative Bolt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to clarify, I assume the term non-photographic digital media would preclude Photoshop and other things like that. This is strictly allowing the digital painting. Is that correct?
Right. And when I went to the Senate meeting, somebody asked a similar question, and I thought, you know, with this entry, I put down that it was a digital painting, and they said, oh, well, that's not allowed. But it's made out of ink. If I had put ink on it, they would have said it would have been fine. But I think with photography, too, I mean, you have to rely on the artists to say, honestly, if there's a photograph included in that. If I'm an acrylic painter, I could take a photograph and just paint over that acrylic, you know, over the photograph, I don't think that's right either. I think the bottom line is you're trying to create a really nice piece of artwork, and that doesn't come with just taking a photograph. I mean, it's a lot of work to create one of these, and I think that always shines through. I think you tell the artist, is there a photograph included in it? They say, no, there's not. You know, you just have to trust that's the way it is.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You've given me hope because I can't paint worth a hoot, but this gives me another chance that I might be able to do something, so thank you.
We're happy, Representative Bull, that this has enlightened you. Your first question, Representative Bull, was one that I had in the back of my head. Not being overly computer literate, I admit that. Is there a way to prove that it's not photograph-based?
Actually, with Procreate, you can run a video, and if somebody wanted to see you create it, it actually goes through all the steps, and it'll run it through. A one like this takes about 25 hours of my time to make one of those. So it's just painting, just like if I had a canvas. The only difference is it's a glass canvas that I'm using.
And thank you. And the reason I asked that question, I see the word non-photographic in the bill, and I just...
You want it to be an artwork. It's not a photography contest.
But I don't know the veracity of, can we prove that it's...
I don't. As I said, if I'm an acrylic painter and I paint over a photograph, you wouldn't know that either. You know, I think there's just a certain amount of trust you have to say that these artists are abiding by the rules. It's really hard to prove it, I think, you know, but...
Yeah, that's where I'm getting to, and I'll offer to you that I think you can prove about painting acrylic.
I can.
My
first
wife was watercolor artist, so I know a little bit about this, and yeah, you can look at it from both sides and tell what's been done on most of those. So, I trust that people are going to do the right thing. So I think it's good, Bill. Do we have other? Okay. Yeah, we do. Representative Lute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And wow, this is hopefully this wasn't mired in a 1975 act that prevented anybody from adopting and looking at new technology. On a serious nature, I guess one of the questions I have for the author is, well, is the Minnesota DNR jumped in wholeheartedly to make this change, or what do they have to say about that from that perspective? Because here we are changing a statute, and where do they weigh in on this? I hope they're on your side.
Introduce yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Pat Rivers, Deputy Director for the Division of Fish and Wildlife.
And to the question that Representative Luke.
We welcome any artwork the legislature would like us to consider in these stamp contests, so we look forward to this submission should it be passed.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I would hope that we can move this along fairly quickly.
To that end, Representative Fabian. Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question to the author or maybe to research folks. What is it meant on line 111? Good cause exemption.
Who wants to take that? Okay, please.
Mr. Chair, members, under statute, there's a process that agency can use to be exempted from the normal rulemaking process when it's very clear what the legislature intends. So they wouldn't, and this is just basically stating that it's very clear what the DNR would need to do to amend their rules, and this is just explicitly stating that they can use that sort of abbreviated process to do so.
Representative Anderson, did you hear all that?
I heard most of it. So my immediate question is, if we change the statute to change this, why do we need to use a good clause exemption if it's clearly in statute?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, it's actually not in statute. It's currently in a rule. So this is, the bill is telling the DNR to amend that particular rule.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Taylor. So do we have more questions out of that, or we're running a little bit late, so if you can, I appreciate Okay. Representative Hansen.
Nope.
Okay. I think we've got all the questions out of the way. Some comments from the author, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill, and I hope that we can change the rules so that we can get more really beautiful artwork in the stamp contest. So thank you.
And we asked for audience comments and questions, I believe, but I'm going to ask it one more time. Representative Fabian.
Well, Mr. Chair, this opens up a conversation a little bit. But so in the future, if new technologies are we going to have to change a law again, or would it be easier to just let the DNR change the rules?
I don't have the answer to that.
I think I know what the answer is.
I know there's things coming at us that you and I probably can't conceive of, but I'm guessing, technology-wise, because it's gone a long ways in my lifetime.
So,
yes,
Mr. Chair, thank you. So, and I appreciate what you're doing. I really do. But if we're thinking a few years down the road, are we better to just leave the system? And that's up to you as the chair, the chief author of the bill, but
I'll vote for it. Not sure.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, I'd be willing to work with you on a future bill like that.
Hearing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion. Recommend that House File 262 be referred to Ways and Means. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The bill is on its way. Thank you. Now we're going to take 875 off the table, and I think we need to do the even-numbered pages now. And I don't recollect exactly where we were here, to be honest. Please, Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will continue on with where I've been on trying to explain what the different sections we're going to do.
Okay.
And I think where we started running into it was when I started talking about Section 3, Subdivision 2. So I'll pick up from there and continue on. And what it does there is it notes that the comprehensive watershed plans, a.k.a. One Watershed, One Plan, which are developed jointly by local governments, are on a watershed boundary. And they can serve to fulfill some elements of the purposes of the water quality improvements in Chapter 114D, which is the Clean Water Legacy Act. Section 4, Subdivision 5, clarifies the biennial interval for Bowser to propose potential changes of the state plan to fully transition to the watershed-based plan statewide by 2025, depending on state funding. This helps with predictability as state funding is via biannual appropriations. Section 5, Subdivision 3A, and Section 6, Subdivision 3B, terms being defined consistently across chapters. This is a technical improvement that adds uniformity. Section 7, Subdivision 7, updates the restoration term to align with Minnesota's broad and comprehensive watershed approach to water quality improvements. Section 8, Subdivision 11, updates the term TMDL implementation plan to allow comprehensive watershed management plans to serve as an implementation plan for a TMDL when the plan is designated and then determined by the MPCA to achieve the applicable water quality standards. Section 9, Subdivision 13. As I said, this gets pretty technical. Some of this is kind of boring here, so please bear with me. It allows the watershed areas to acknowledge practical factors such as when watersheds cross state boundaries and clarifies that on a primary use of watershed scientific data and analysis for the implementation purposes. For example, the one watershed planning boundaries are established based on hydrology and water and how the rain and water falls. However, it does not make sense to go through a whole separate planning process for a small piece of land that is incorporated into an adjoining plan, and it puts the RAPS elements into a more coherent order. Subdivision 10, Section 10, Subdivision 2, Section 11, Subdivision 3, updates to better reflect the process innovation, such as RAPS and One Watershed, One Plan, that have been developed since the advent of the Clean Water Legacy Act, and to better support and align Minnesota's comprehensive approach to planning. Section 12, Subdivision 5, Section 13, Subdivision 7, reflects the reality that the MPC, rather than the Clean Water Council, sets operational priorities for scheduling RAPs and TMLDs and requires the MPCA to consult with the Clean Water Council and other agencies in prioritizing and scheduling them. It clarifies and expands criteria for the priorities to include protection and restoration. Section 14, Subdivision 8. This new subdivision includes a mechanism for the MPCA to use elements of Minnesota's locally led watershed management programs to substitute for a TMLD, RAPs, or an implementation plan for a TMLD, TMDL under specific circumstances. This change is being proposed to enhance the efficiency of state and local planning and strategy development efforts and to move more rapidly and efficiently from assessment to planning and action, better incorporate scientific data and assurance of water quality improvements into local-led comprehensive water management programs, provide flexibility so that each watershed can uniquely address based on the needs that it faces, and accelerate the implementation of local watershed projects. Section 15, Subdivision 9, provides for the consideration of a mutual joint water project's quality and practices. For example, a watershed district and a city could collaborate together to share in developing or sustaining common clean water infrastructure. Section 16, Subdivisions 1 through 3, updates to align Minnesota's comprehensive systematic approach to monitoring, assessing, modeling, and developing action plans for each watershed. Section 17, Subdivision 1, Sections 18, Subdivision 3, updates to recognize the critical role of local government in public and stakeholder participation and ensure that public and stakeholder participation is thorough, inclusive, timely, and coordinated toward implementing a locally led action for each watershed. And Section 19, because each watershed is unique, this new provision enables use of comprehensive watershed management plans as a more accurate basis for estimating Minnesota's non-point water quality needs and progress. So at that is a quick run-through. At this point, would it be okay if I turned it over to my testifiers?
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First testifier is Leanne Buck from Soil and Water Districts, and I'd like to have her once reintroduce herself and start her testimony, please.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. Again, my name is Leanne Buck. I'm with the Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts here in Minnesota, and our association is also working very closely with the Minnesota Association of Counties as well as the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts. So, again, thank you for the opportunity, and we do support House File 875. We see this bill as providing modifications that would allow our soil and water districts to move beyond assessing and planning to accelerating actions and the best management practices on the landscape. As a member of the original, what we called ourselves the G16, it was a diverse stakeholder process back in 2003. And ultimately, that group led to the creation of the Clean Water Legacy Act in 2006. We, at the time, were committed to addressing what I would say federal Clean Water Act requirements and the implications for Minnesota. I'd also acknowledge, for example, Craig Johnson was one of my cohorts in that G16 process. So we did have a diverse local government stakeholder process as well as state, environmental, and agricultural groups. But the driving force back then in 2003 to 2006, we were focusing on EPA's total maximum daily loads, or as Representative Fisher, the TMDLs. We also were acknowledging at the time there were lawsuits, and there was a lot of redundancy in assessing our waters in Minnesota, and we wanted to be more strategic. Since that time, we've also worked through a progression of state policy and ultimately the passage of the Clean Water Legacy Act, as I mentioned. And this was a plus we've had the constitutional amendment, but we're also looking for us, to me, it captures a state-led approach to and leadership with the process called RAPS, Watershed Restoration Protection Strategy. So as local governments, while all this was going on, we teamed up with the Association of Watershed Districts and the Association of Counties, and we said we need to do a better job, too, with our local water planning efforts. And thus, we created what we call now the One Watershed, One Plan. So as this has evolved, again, we're looking at improving our water quality, of taking the science from the state agencies, looking at that local leadership, having the stakeholders, and having them have some ownership of the cleanup of their waters and their locally led activities. So again, we're trying to put all the partners together and ultimately lead to implementation. So today this bill is before you. It's acknowledging those transitions of the laws, the policies, and programs. And again, we want to empower our local government to accelerate what I would call boots on the ground, engage our local citizens, and work together on activities related to improving water quality. So again, we appreciate the opportunity for this bill and thank Representative Fisher for his work. And at this time, I'd like to turn it over to my partner, Emily Javens.
Hi, introduce yourself, please. Proceed.
Hello, my name is Emily Javens. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts. I've been in this position for about 1 year, and prior to that, I was the Administrator of the Yellow Medicine River Watershed District. And we were one of the pilots for the One Watershed, One Plan. And like you had mentioned earlier today, when you do a pilot, you find out what works well and what does not. And there were some things that that clearly work very, very well, and there were some things where the state and us at the local level are on completely on top of each other and doing the same thing more than once. So I'll just give you a quick example of how it worked for us and how it didn't work. One thing that worked really well was when the state came in and did the intensive monitoring. They've done that across the entire state now, and we have really good data. Then they have also been able to identify the stressors. When we have impaired waters, we know where that's coming from and why that's coming from. They built a fantastic model that took a look in our watershed. It was 17 years of data, and then it was calibrated, and it took into account what the land use was, the rainfall patterns. It actually made a calculation every single hour as in terms of what was happening in the river at the time, how much pollutant load was there, how much flow was there, and that is a model then that they set up another tool for us that we can go back and rerun that 17 years of data, and we can put cover crops on the whole watershed, rerun it, and see what's happening in the river. And that is something that the state has created for us, and that is where it worked really, really well. And that was part of that RAPS process. The end of the RAPS process, the S is the strategy. So they were required to come up with an implementation strategy. So they came in and asked the local citizens, which water bodies do you care about the most? And which ones, what are you willing to do to fix it? And so we went through that process. They came up with an implementation plan. Then in the One Watershed, One Plan, we had to do the same thing. We had to go and ask the citizens, what do we care about the most and what are we willing to do to fix it? And this was within the same year. And then also we did at the same time the total maximum daily load study was completed. That's where it decides how much pollutant can a water body hold, right? Well, once that gets figured out, then an implementation plan is required by our state law. So now it is actually going to be required that a third implementation plan be written. And so this is not necessary, and we are clearly burning out our citizens and our staff at the local levels to constantly, we are in planning fatigue and burnout. And so this bill for us really will allow us to move to implementation. I think that's what citizens want. Let's get some projects on the ground. And we are so ready to get some projects on the ground. And the other thing is now these things also cycle, these planning. And so now some of these RAPs are coming back due again. It's like, oh, nothing hardly even changed. Do we really need to go do a full extensive reinvestigation of that? We really do not. And so there allows some flexibility here to say how much really is necessary to be redone. So, and one of the things, I just think, where is the plan best written? And I think where that is best written is at that One Watershed, One Plan level, where that is adopted and written by locals, not at the state level. When you have people invested and they're the ones that say, I'm willing to do this, and they're at the table. And so I think the state can kind of back off on a few of those things, and this is what that does. It allows that. And don't get me wrong, those plans, we are required to make sure that they are prioritized, targeted, and measurable, and we report that, and we continue to do that and are excited about that process. Thank you.
Representative Wiginia.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Two entirely different comments, but one is for Representative Hansen's committee, but I would like to draw it out. And that is when you're talking about spending money in Subdivision 5, that is the clean water money that you are spending. And unfortunately, at this point, there are no outcomes for the clean water money spending. So we've spent almost $1 billion, and there haven't been outcomes. And in this bill, we are going, in my judgment, backwards. Because in line 1.14, instead of having money allocated on the basis of performance, now you can just have it allocated. When you say it's program-based, there is no outcome, no standard. So I think that's a question for Representative Hansen's committee, and that would go along again with Subdivision 7, line 3.24, where you are pursuing something. So are you pursuing could mean you're going to solve 10% of a problem, 1% of a problem, 1,000th of a percent of a problem? I think that that language is so broad that it needs to be reworked. But that is those are issues for Representative Hansen's committee. On a whole nother, I'm in the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District, and that district is probably one of the older and has longer history than any others. But right now, Minnehaha Creek has become just a stormwater conduit. It's no longer a healthy creek. And I think the reason is that we've had a lot of rain, and our watershed district never planned for a lot of rain. Well, we know from testimony now that we're going to have lots more rain events, and they're going to be huge. And so when I looked at the underlying statute that you're basing all this work on, which is the Watershed District Statute, it is way out of date. Doesn't look at climate change. Doesn't look at big rain events. And I think that this, without reforming that statute, doesn't get us anywhere. Because now my watershed district did not plan for the one big thing that is happening to us. So I just to give you a sense of it, Minnehaha Creek, which used to go down to a dribble in August, which is its natural state, has been totally full right to the edge of its banks. I saw it that way in November, and this is the second year I saw it in November. So it is just taking stormwater, and that's just about all it's doing. So I think the watershed law is in way need of updating. When we talk about 2018-19, this will not work without that. So just we need to have conversations about that.
Representative Fisher, it sounds like there's some work to be done, perhaps, and I think you got a good start on trying to get folks together. That's my take on it, and obviously some more work. We're always going to have work in this area. There's no right. Two ways about it. I wanted to ask that just real quick here. Anybody in the audience that's looking to give testimony on this bill, House Bill 875. Don't see anybody running to the table. So, and I don't see any further questions here. So, Representative Fisher, do you have some closing comments on your bill?
First of all, Mr. Chair, Committee, I want to thank you for the opportunity to present the bill. I appreciate the additional information that Representative Grenius has presented that we'll incorporate it and have answers to and some ways to address that by the time we get to Representative Hansen's committee. And I appreciate the additional input about taking a look at the climate change impact of things. I know that has an impact particularly in the stormwater area. I don't know if that will end up being in here. If we end up doing it, that might be more of a separate bill that we'll take a look at. But I'm very open to taking a look at that and seeing what we can do to address that situation. So thank you. And I hope that everyone will vote for the bill. Thank you.
And no further discussion here. I'll renew my motion, recommend that House File 875 be referred to Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The bill's on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you, committee.
Okay. I don't have anything else on my agenda here, so unless folks want to stay around and talk about water quality or whatever, you know. We're adjourned.